sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex. Hey there, this is Judy. We are back continuing our four-part series that got a little complicated because it was four parts, then one of those parts got divided into two sections, and then there was this holiday break thing that happened. So if you are just joining us for the podcast for the first time, I'm going to suggest that you might, if you want to start at the beginning of this series, you might start back at episode 17, where it all began. We're going to dive into part three. So I believe this is the fourth episode of this series, but it is part three of the series. Mostly focusing on communication today is knowing how to do what you need to do in the relationship that you trust yourself to do in an adult manner. So communicating what you feel and what you need to express. So let me just share with you all four parts and then you'll know where we're at. So episode 17. Knowing where you are in the relationship, knowing when it is time to call it quits. That part was covered in episodes 17 and 18. Leaning into intuition and trusting yourself, that's episode 19. And today is going to be the communication, knowing how to do that thing is that we have now decided to do, whatever it is, whatever needs to be done, in a productive and in an adult manner. And then next week is going to be what to do afterwards. So hopefully that all makes sense. And if it doesn't, just keep listening. You'll be fine.
All right. Part three.
Yahoo.
Knowing how to do what you are trusting yourself to do in an adult manner. And I have that segmented as communication. How to communicate what you feel or what you need to express to a partner or individual based on where you feel your relationship is at and then trusting yourself to make a decision about it, whatever decision that is. Mm-hmm. So at this point, you've already leaned into your intuition and you're trusting your choice. Okay, so mm-hmm. You've evaluated, are you the chicken or the dog, right? Are you in or you out? Where is your relationship? Does it need some addressing, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know? Then leaning into that intuition and trusting yourself that what you're saying is real and valid and true. And that if you have additional desires, additional concerns, or you have regrets of any kind, how to express those.
Right.
How do you have that conversation with your partner, spouse, fuck buddy, I don't know, whatever it might be. So,
And these things, you know, again, in the whole fuck buddy situation, you know, mm-hmm. that is a relationship.
Sure it is.
And it needs, you know, it needs to be treated as such as well.
So I often, my business is called the Power Exchange, and I look at everything from a place of power exchanging. And I like to look at relationships as if it's a business opportunity or a business merger. I use that analogy quite a bit. And when you go into a relationship or a power exchange, there's negotiations that happen. And we do it usually without even talking about it. We pick up on signals. We ask questions. We hold hands. We do all these different things, testing each other kind of in those early stages of a relationship to kind of see where the boundaries are, what defines this, who are you, who am I, what will I share, what won't I share. But it's a divulging of information that then allows you to make an informed decision. Mm-hmm. Once we're in a relationship, however, all of that stuff has already happened probably a while ago, right? Mm-hmm. And things change, which we talked about people change, relationships change, dynamics change. Maybe a kid is involved or a dog or a move or a stressful job, whatever. Different things come into the picture that change the way everybody relates with each other. So communication is so incredibly important because even in business, we have regular meetings. You have quarterly meetings about finances. You have HR meetings. You have sales team meetings. You have meetings upon meetings. You have emails that are going back and forth. Communication makes business work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Phone calls, blah, 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 blah. So this next segment, most of what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to break it down into the five questions we were taught about in school about how to communicate.
Mm.
Do you remember back in maybe, I think it was probably second grade when we were encouraged to have pen pals? They don't do that now anymore.
No, they don't. Well, who needs pen pals? You got emails.
Email, right. But we had to like write letters. Mm-hmm. And we'd write letters and it was another classroom with a teacher that the teachers had coordinated. They had addresses. They'd swap. They'd send one big envelope full of letters or notes from the class to kids in another country or whatever, and then they'd write back to you, and it would go back and forth. It would be a whole school year thing that you'd have this pen pal.
Wow. I did not do that in school.
You didn't?
That's really cool. No.
It was really cool. And in the process, you learned how to have a conversation, because sometimes the responses that were sent to you were really quite vague and there was nothing really to build off of. So you'd have to ask the five questions: who, what, when, where, and why. And then sometimes how, you know, you'd throw in the last one just to get the meat and potatoes going of a letter. So when we talk about having even a conversation, I'm not talking, we don't have to be pen pals about this. Maybe your preferred communication is email because then it's in writing. Some people are technical that way. Some people don't do as well with words as they do with writing. Speaking, you know, to each other, emotions get involved, and maybe writing something out is easier.
And sometimes it's not having that person's reaction right at you.
Yeah,
right then.
That's a trigger and button.
It's,
right?
Right. And just, or the fear, it brings up the fear and then you don't get out what you need to say.
Right.
You know, so I know in some of the relationships I've had, well, and then we think of how dating is different now. Right now it's swipe left, swipe right, whatever. Right. Where when I was dating a billion years ago, you know, back on stone tablets, we would email, and I would, before I ever talked to the person on the phone, I would get to know them by email, and I would like that person or not by writing, which isn't always, I'm not saying that that's the best way, but I feel like you create a different relationship, and
right.
Some people continue to go through that. And I've had, you know, relationships that have shifted, but I think sometimes that being able to communicate in writing, if that is a way that works for you to go back to it when things are challenging, can be really, really helpful when you're fearful or just, you know, you're trying to get some stuff out.
Yeah. Because the stuff, and I want to be clear that we're not talking about just how people tear apart a relationship, like how to drop the bomb. This may just be communicating, hey, I've noticed some things about our relationship and I'd really like us to work on it. You know, so it could be proactive. This could be a very positive communication about growing closer together through the relationship and through possibly the need for counseling or addressing a certain fear that you have or insecurity and asking for support and accountability, you know? So this can be very productive, especially if it's done with some thought and not in an emotion, not when you're sparked, not when you're triggered. You are definitely, you need to kind of back up first. And I'll start with the very first question, which is who? So I want you to think about rating the value of this person. We talk about the fact that our partners, we loved them or love them, or they have some sort of value to you. How much do you value this person? How grateful are you for this person in your life? On a scale of 1 to 10, maybe, what do they mean to you? This should really kind of set a tone for the entire conversation, whether it's written or spoken or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then the next question is, who are you? Are you being authentic? Do you have pure intention? Are you being organic and vulnerable? Do you know why you're saying what you're saying? Really kind of you having your own real understanding of what it is you're trying to communicate will help get the message across. When we're clear about what we're communicating, it's so much easier to deliver the information. And then there's no blurred lines. There's no misunderstanding afterward. Mm-hmm. Then the next one is, who is it you're really speaking to? So there's you and your partner or spouse or whatever, fuck buddy. But who is it you're really talking to? Is it about you? Is it about them? Is it about a situation? Is it about a third party? Who are we speaking about? Identify. Really understand where exactly this information is being directed. Okay. Now think about, how does this person that we're communicating to, how do they receive information? Mm-hmm. This is important because, like you're saying, the emotion part, if you know this person is going to be triggered by a conversation or super defensive, or they would receive it better in a written form, or maybe you should do a voicemail. I don't suggest these kind of conversations through text.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you have to have that much separation from somebody in order to get important stuff out. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's not the best, because even through written form in an email, you can convey intent. In text, there's so much lacking. Mm-hmm. In a short little box, and the run, and in the impulse moment of it, you know, the it dinging at the most unopportune time, right, or whatever,
yes,
you know?
Yes. And that, and the person reading it is affected by all the stuff that's going on. And now one more person, mm-hmm. one more thing. I was listening to a guy talk about getting texts from his wife when he was like in Iraq, you know, dealing with war stuff, and like it's, you know, the worst times to get the text from your wife going, where the hell is the new bag of dog food, or, you know, whatever.
Oh my gosh, and
I'm like thinking, oh my gosh, like how horrible would that, like just the intensity of the amount of stuff coming at you. You're right. Yeah, texts, that's I think one of the reasons text is so hard, because email is also can come kind of when at you, you know,
black
now
and
we,
white. Yeah.
Right. Well, and we get informed of our emails so often, so quickly, mm-hmm. but it kind of, I think it's sort of, even in the text versus email platform, there's so much more room in an email. It's so much easier to
fluidly write.
Right. And to edit a little bit, where text mm-hmm. is like, it's kind of meant to be short, and it's kind of then boom, it's right there, where your email is like, okay, that's an email. I'm going to hold off on that. This isn't a good time.
Yeah.
For that. You know, it kind of allows you to say, I don't know what that is. And maybe even can say that in an email to somebody, hey, you know, this is important. So when you have a chance to sit down.
Yeah. Right.
So it
predicate it.
That
sure.
out there. Right. And, you know, some of those things too. But man, the time and the place of receiving something, you know, we don't have fonts yet we don't have sarcastic font. We don't have frustrated font. We don't have,
right.
And
it's not like you're putting little emojis in there in your
email.
No,
that gets dangerous, you know? Right?
Yeah, right. Little pile of shit, right? Can change everything. Anyway, and then the last part I want you to think about is in the who, is this gratitude for this individual in the purpose of the universe. This person was brought into your life for lessons, for joy, for pain, there's something that this person is in your life for. So just a gratitude for why this person's in your life. It doesn't have to be a regret. Just a minute to say, okay, I got into this relationship. I'm here to learn. I'm growing. This other person is growing. I'm just thankful for what I'm learning as I go through this process. So that's how we kind of finish out the who. Then the next step is the what, right? So what's the relevance? Keep it short. That whole idea of keep it simple, stupid, so powerful when it comes to these kind of conversations, you know, anything where it's relationship based and where it doesn't need to be a long drawn out rehashing of history and all the details and things. This should probably be very relevant. One or two topics, keep it kind of simple at a time. You know, if you want to continue sending emails or having conversations down the road, try and address the information at hand in the moment. Don't allow things to fester long over time, because that just builds steam and it allows you to incorporate other things and makes it into this huge snowball of, well, more like an iceberg. You know, the iceberg floats and only the tip of the iceberg is what's showing. And underneath is the big old ball of anger and frustration. And also in the what should be truthfulness. And this is kind of where I want to talk about expressing things in the I statements and how you feel, because then it's not an attack on them. It's coming from your heart. It's coming from your place of truth. I feel, or you say something along the lines of, I've noticed recently that I'm having some feelings around X, Y, and Z. I'd really like to talk about this to get to the other side of why I'm feeling this way. And, you know, you can just actually kind of defuse the entire conversation just by making it from a place of, I'm looking for a solution. I'm not looking at this as a problem. And the solution is getting to the other side of it, whatever that is. Okay. So it's not like, I want to break up. I'm having some serious feelings and I'd really like to talk about what this looks like on the other side, how to get through it. Okay. There should be purpose. Oftentimes when we talk and we say things to hear ourselves talk. And when we're talking to somebody, we're automatically thinking about our response, what our response is going to be, because, oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that. But I meant, that's not what I meant. That's not what I said. Or, you know, we're always ready to be on the defense. Instead, we need to stop and ask ourselves, why am I talking right now? So it's that pause thought again, the W-A-I-T, why am I talking? Okay. And that will help you to understand if it's from an ego place, if you're just defending yourself, if you're angry, if you're not feeling understood. You need to be able to identify those feelings so that you know where they're coming from. Otherwise, it's just words. And the person is going to shut down. They're not going to receive your communication. Okay. And the last part of the what is the intention? Is the intention to hurt somebody? Is the intention to rip a Band-Aid off? Is the intention to have a friendship on the other side? Is the intention to show love? You know, really kind of set that intention before you even write or have the conversation. Next thing is the when. Now, this is really, really important. When we think about timing, like you were saying, that text message to the soldier, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, the dog food? Really? They get texts about the dog food over in Afghanistan?
It occurred to me that they would get like random text
messages.
My whole life, one of the pen pals I did have was a soldier in Iraq during Desert Storm. So they get their mail like once every whenever.
Right. And that's
and that's their communication. To think that they're carrying a phone on their body that they can communicate with people back here is crazy from when 10 years ago or however long it was, you got to talk to your husband once a week or once a month.
Or they're out in the field somewhere and all of a sudden their phone dings and gives up their location. And then, you know,
I just even understand how that works, quite frankly.
Yeah, me either. But okay, so think about timing. You should always try to be one step removed. And by this, I mean, don't write angry. Don't argue angry. At least have had a little bit of time or an action. Something has happened between an incident, or say you got up and you and your spouse have a fight in the morning, and then you leave and go to the grocery store and come back, and then you write an email or you have a conversation. Try to have, it's another pause. It's another form of a pause. Mm-hmm. And this is so that we're not so reactive. We're acting, not reacting. Okay. So the impulse to be angry and flash fire from our eyes and our fingertips comes really, really easily when we're impulsive. Mm-hmm. So trying to purposely detach from the outcome, again, detach from the emotion, and kind of really just come from a heart and head place is different. It kind of really helps to communicate clearly and concisely without a ton of muddled stuff in there. Mm-hmm. Let's see, again, don't let emotions drive. Choose the language you want to speak. I cannot say this one enough. The words you choose to use will oftentimes determine the outcome. So if you're trying to invoke a fight, if you're trying to really piss someone off, the words you choose, most of the time when we have a partner, we know what those words are. We know the phrases to use that really tip them over the edge. You know, we know our partner's buttons and triggers too. So it's really try to be, if you really want to be constructive and get a point across, you will leave that kind of communication out. It will be very clear, very concise, very matter of fact. This is really kind of the way it is, sort of like a profits and loss statement in a business. This is where we are, and this is where we're lacking, and the numbers don't lie. So use words that don't lie. Use words that tell the story in a clear, concise way, using your feelings and those I statements, because that's your truth. You can't project. You can't, you shouldn't. You can't even say shouldn't. I would advise not putting words into your partner's mouth, not you always do this. Generalizations are bad news. Try not to use generalizations at all. Always, never, whatever you want, you know, that kind of thing, because they're not truth. Right. So there's
that.
They
feel like it, but they're not.
Right. Then the next one is where. So where do you deliver this message, right? Never in the bedroom. Mm. Never, never in the bedroom.
Right.
Right. Sometimes a public place is best to have a conversation like this because it keeps you in check. Sometimes a neutral ground, someplace where it's not, it's just not like nobody can stomp off to the bedroom or turn off the television to ignore you or go take the dog for a walk. Go someplace purposeful together. Don't send this email and have them read it at work. You know, that's not being thoughtful. That's not being kind. If, of course, you're trying to get to the other side as friends, don't be spiteful. You know, just kind of have some class about it. It'll go far. It'll go far with yourself, help you to rest with your decision or your way of communicating. And it should never be in front of other people.
Mm, which makes the public place.
Well, tricky, there are public places you can go without degrading somebody in front of other people.
Right, for sure. And depending on what you're truly wanting to talk to them about.
Yeah, what the intention is.
And I know I heard somebody talk about the fact that they, when they're having a hard conversation, they actually go out to eat because it keeps them from yelling at each other.
Yes.
And they're able to have to think through. And though I think that like a part of me thinks that that's a really, that could be a really dangerous thing for many people, because if your emotions are rising, then your digestion is not good while you're, that's not good for us. But perhaps some people can be in a place where they really do have good quality conversation and thoughtful conversation over some food or over, you know, a cup of coffee or tea.
Yeah.
And it keeps them in check with each other, and it keeps them, because you have to be thinking a little differently and in that t- type of
awareness. Right. Right.
So yeah. So it could be a good, you know, it could be a good way. Yeah. Again, I think the subject matter is really important as to what you're not only airing out into the world, but what other people have to listen to. If it is a coffee shop kind of thing.
Right. You don't want to go somewhere where it's so intimate and people are on top of you when you're talking right. about your sex life, you know, right, that exactly. might not be the best. Right.
Entertaining perhaps for the yeah. next table. Who knows? But.
And the last thing I have, which is something that I suggest, is that when you're not in a place of conflict or in a place where you have to have a heavy conversation, that perhaps you choose a spot together, a special place where you come for communication.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Whether it's a park bench or you go to the zoo. Or, you know, some place to that brings you connection that makes it that it's about the solution and it's about this is something we do versus this is something that's happening to me.
And it makes, and I would say, and I think I caught this in the words that you said, but the intent of when you're finding that space, to do it when you're not angry, to do it mm-hmm. before. So it is a space that you, I can imagine, never done this, mm-hmm. but I can imagine if I was in a relationship and we chose before having issues of big sorts, perhaps, or just deciding, yeah. man, let's come here, you know, and yeah. being in a good, happy place, because then it takes that, I can imagine that it can take the sort of the environment around the conversation in your head. It can lighten that load already when you go to sit down because of the intention of the spot that you've yeah. chosen together.
And you know, it acknowledges the idea that there will be challenges mm-hmm. and that it doesn't mean you're a fuck up or a failure because right. you have to go have a talk. And maybe it's someplace that you visit regularly, like you set an appointment in your phone for every 6 months that you're going to get together and chit chat,
right.
regardless of what's going on, to make sure that you're staying connected in that way right. and making the spot a special place. So
that state of the relationship or whatever you want to call it, that sounds friendlier than that.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
Talk.
So that's the where, and then the why. I want people to think about when you're having difficult conversations with somebody, why, what is it about the need to be right? Can you give it up? Why are you defensive? Why are you aggravating a situation, or why do you feel compelled to say something? Is it because you have to be right? In those kind of conversations, when somebody has to be right, nobody wins. Nobody walks away feeling good. Even the person who thinks they won doesn't necessarily feel good about having walked away with a win in that conversation because they had a fight for it.
And I think also, sometimes I hear discussions around disagreements. It's about winning and losing all mm-hmm. the time. Like somebody has to win, and it's like, well, it's about solutions.
Solutions. It's about a both and yeah. or a win-win. Like if we used a breakup as an example, it would be more along the lines of this isn't working for either of us. We're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we deserve happiness? Or I know that I care for you and I love you, but this is not the way I envisioned my life going. And I think I need to explore some other things. Mm-hmm. There's always the opportunity that you can say that you need a separation or to put something on hold to give yourself some space so that you can think clearly independently. And then from there, step it out further if necessary, or go to counseling or whatever. I know it's not an opportunity. It's not the best situation for a lot of people who entangle their money or their, you know, their finances aren't fantastic. So it's hard for them to find a separate place to go.
Right.
Oftentimes that's really the best first step unless peeling off that Band-Aid is really the way that you're intending for the conversation to go. You know, sleeping on a couch or still staying in the same bed and being kind of separated and not separated is not, that builds anger and resentment oftentimes.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing is for the why, why is this conversation happening again, is, are you looking for validation? Are you judging? Are you at peace with your decision? Are you in your state of awareness, like you were saying? And is there a spirit of understanding each other? You can walk away from a difficult conversation totally understanding perhaps the reaction of the person you may have just delivered news to, like, I'm leaving, I'm not happy anymore. You can understand how hurt somebody can be,
right,
by that being delivered. But that doesn't mean that you lose yourself if that's your decision. But you can be compassionate without losing yourself too. I understand this was really a difficult conversation. I know this isn't probably what you wanted to hear. I do care for you. However, I need more. You know, there can always be those. The thing that I hear in couples a lot is when somebody says they love you, I love you. And the other person is like, well, if you loved me, you'd do this. If you loved me, you wouldn't be hurting me like this. Mm. If you loved me, you'd show me. Now, there's three different kinds of love. The Eros love, which is the lust love. A lot of sexual fire and passion. That's usually in the beginning of a relationship that then turns into agape love. Agape love is that familial kind of love, the brother, sister, the family unit, a deep love for a person as their soul. And then there's phileo love, phileto. I think of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And that is the love of community, or when we say we love people, that it's the general broad word love. So the problem in relationships often is that everybody's expecting Eros love to last forever. Mm-hmm. And when it switches into agape, sometimes people are disillusioned, like they've lost that Eros love, so now they feel like they're just settling, and they're always searching for Eros. They can't seem to balance Eros and agape together.
We're not taught to do that in our culture.
No, we're not. And so they disassociate, and then they say that they love a person, but what they really mean is phileo love, that they have fallen out of the deep love, and they're into a more communal love. I will love you as a person, but I'm not in love with you, agape. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. So if that's where you are, you know, don't toy with a word like love that has three meanings.
Again, another thing we don't talk about. We never, I can't believe we in this culture haven't tried to figure out, haven't worked on that more.
Yeah.
We haven't defined those. It allows for a lot of slippery slope conversations. Well, I said I love you. I didn't mean that way, but it's one word, you know.
Yep, that's
we don't
right.
have to think about what that all means, and that we're not educated on that. It isn't part of our learning, and I think it's a really important part of our learning as we grow up. But we, you know, again, depending on kind of how you grew up, the love word is such a strange word anyway. Yeah. It can be used in positive, or it can be not used at all. It can be used, overused.
It's so powerful. It's a very powerful word. And like you said, overused or used lightly. Love is the opposite of hate. So, I mean, like, when you think of that and you just toss around the word love, or you toss around the word hate, like my kids used to walk around, I hate that. I hate you. I hate that show. And I'm like, do you really hate it, or do you dislike it? Right. I mean, like, can we just, I guess that maybe that was a button for me. I don't know. But then on the flip side, it's the same thing with love. When we really like something, or we, you know, you can use different words like adore or whatever. There's all different kinds of adjectives to use for the word love. But when it comes down to having a difficult conversation with somebody, and you don't love them the same way anymore, you need to not use the love word. Because that plants a seed for interpretation that can be just really, really difficult to allow them the space to grow out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. We're back to creating space, right? If you're creating space and you're keeping that love word active, when you know that you're no longer in love, or that love has passed or shifted into a different type of love, unless you have that conversation where you're like, well, I used to love you like this, and now I love you like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have that conversation. Then you're being informational and educational. but don't expect them to be understanding that when you're explaining it to them if you're trying to break off a relationship with someone. They're not going to, that's not going to be the part they remember.
Right.
So, so if we go from that into the how do we do this? I just gave you a whole bunch of stuff to consider.
Can I throw a couple more things before you go?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So a couple of things that come to mind are to remember, and I don't know if we've talked about this on this podcast or not, but there's also an idea that seems to show up in our culture a lot, is that you have to hate your ex-partner.
Oh, yeah.
That, well, you know, that, and I understand that sometimes that's how it turns out, but I have seen, talked to people where they have people actively telling them when they have created a good relationship with their ex, maybe it's somebody they have children with, where people are saying that's, it's not natural. You shouldn't be okay with this. You shouldn't communicate that well. You should hate them and actively say things, not to both of the people. And who knows, maybe some cases, I'm sure that happens too, for mm-hmm. sure. But just not being able to let that go. And I see that sometimes happens, or people cannot even imagine being able to communicate well with their spouse. And a lot of people with kids, then the challenge is to figure out how do you co-parent your children. And how do you do, so they end up having this divorce that has been, or, you know, breakup that has been really bad, because we haven't learned how to do this well. Mm-hmm. And then now they have these kids and they're trying to shield this from their kids, and they're trying to, as a long, you know, communicate and hate this person at the same time. And how much can we let that go and say, yeah, this didn't work, and we need to figure this out like adults, you know, and figure out how to do this and let go of some of the hurt. And what do we need to do to process through that, whether it's together, where it's apart. But I think also, to steal a line from Dan Savage again, you know, his statement is, it's, you know, relationships are the only thing that to succeed at, one of you has to die. We don't look at breakups, an ending of a relationship that is a failed relationship, instead of maybe that was a really successful relationship and you're being able to end it well or in a timely manner, that, you know, can we count that as a success? Sometimes you can really learn a lot from your relationships.
Yeah. So, I love the disillusion of marriage ceremonies that people are having now.
Oh.
Where they invite their friends and they get unmarried, and they have their kids there, mm-hmm. and they make it a ceremony of ununion.
You know, I think that's really interesting, because it brings people in and it creates the, maybe the softness, or the we don't have to be uncomfortable with this. We're all together and we're all on the same page.
And understanding and acceptance, yep, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a fascinating, I know, poor all of the families who, you know, did that see you apart, and family values. But I also see some family values that it's like, there's no value in this family, because they all hate each other and nobody is allowed to express it.
Right. Right. Good stuff. Yeah, you don't have to hate them. The separation part might be uncomfortable for a while, and that can always be revisited later once some time and space has gone by, just to allow for the healing process to happen, the grief and loss cycle. Again, we come back to that. When you lose a relationship, you do go through the cycle of loss and grief. There's no two ways about that. So until both parties get through that cycle, and that's often where, like with me and my ex-husband, I watched my kids actually go through the stages of loss and grief mm-hmm. for the relationship, And then they went through it for each individual, for me and for my ex, depending on who they were staying with. Mm-hmm. Like, they experienced a whole lot of loss. And that's because that's the way they decided to internalize it. You know, it was all very painful to them. And the fact that, you know, my relationship had been narcissistic and abusive, and it was abrupt in the way that it happened, that didn't help things. But I'll be honest with you, I don't speak one word to my ex-husband, and I don't even honor him with his name in my phone.
Mm.
It just says father of children.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Well, he's one of only five people in my entire life that I can say, I don't know how I'll ever have a relationship with him. And it's not that I haven't tried, but he's still very, very angry. I've gotten over it. I've actually made the wording say that he was an unintentional abuser, that he did what he knew. Mm-hmm. He was raised.
Right. And that's probably
a certain way.
So many people,
and it
right?
was, it carried over into our relationship. And I can right. totally see that. Mm-hmm. So I've come to a place of acceptance of where he was in his journey. But our breakup was nowhere near as civil as all of this. So I can tell you, mm-hmm. all of our listeners, that I get it. This is not as easy as it sounds.
Right.
This is a very mature way to handle at least break the ice around the conversation. You can try it this way. And if it doesn't work out this way, try a mediator if you're really trying to get to a place where mm-hmm. you can. There are people out there who just do that, who right. sit in and mediate conversation to make sure that it doesn't get out of hand or that both sides are being heard. You know, you can elicit outside help.
Right. And I'm definitely, and I don't want to be perceived as saying that you can just make it this way and it can just be civil. What I didn't express well was that in kind of our cultural ideas, sometimes I think it, and because we don't know how to, because we don't acknowledge getting out of relationships at a good time, sometimes mm-hmm. there is the, you push it till it breaks, because, and it's not, and I don't even see that it's always somebody conscientiously pushing it till it breaks, because I don't think that's most of the time what happens. I think it is, we don't know how to do, and so you end up pushing it because you don't quite know how else to do it, or you don't have these tools or support.
Or you're afraid. Yep.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So it ends up, and then it ends up with that pain, and it's not going to just be pretty, you know, great if it can be, but I have had conversations with many people who are like, yeah, I could never be friends with an ex. Like that, not to say their person, they're saying, no, you get rid of exes when they're gone. I remember having a conversation with my coworkers and talking about guys that I was in relationships with and still friends. And he's like, Judy, do you not understand how this works? You don't date somebody anymore, and then you don't talk to them again. And I'm like, well, no, I'm sorry, that's not how it works. One of my other coworkers said, well, maybe Judy's just mature and she can handle some of these, you know, relationships, and she can transition.
Well, kudos to you, but here's another place where as women we've been conditioned that we're not supposed to have enemies, that we're supposed to be kind and we're supposed to be open and loving, and if he comes back to you, you know, the butterfly thing, you know, if you let him go and he comes back, he's yours to keep or right. whatever, you yeah. know, so there's all this, oh, give him another try or keep the door open because he's such a good father or because, you know, he'd stay with you until you die. Like I was talking about in the other segment, that's nice if you want to keep him around for just in case. I don't think that's really fair, though. In some relationships, relationship you have, you need to be able to assess what's going to be the healthiest for you.
Yes. And I do agree.
Because to keep somebody around just because isn't fair to them, and it's not fair to you.
No.
Because you can never, the most unhappy people are the people that are riding the fence. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine your pussy over the top of a chain link fence and how uncomfortable that would be. And you're looking at the grass is greener on the other side, but oh, there's a step stool right here. It would be easy for me to get off the fence and go back to my ex.
Right. You know? And that's no, that's, I mean, that's, I don't be friends to be friends' sake only.
Yeah.
But if you, if it transitions that way and it works okay. out, it's fine. But yeah, don't.
It's good. Right.
Right. But there are times when it is not healthy. You need to get, you need to not be around that person. And I honor, I, yeah, I, it is not to me.
Especially,
it is not, it should be. It is a, if you end up being that way, it's okay.
Yeah. Especially with all the narcissism and stuff in today's mm-hmm. society, the narcissist will not back down. Mm-hmm. And they keep coming at you. They keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. They try and wear you down. And to stand in your power and be able to say, no, enough is enough. I won't take any more, and stand firm, that's to be acknowledged as well. Mm-hmm. So, and friendship can come later. Remember, you can always have a period of space and revisit friendship at a later time.
Right.
But yeah. Allow some time for healing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So, did you, was there anything else you
nope,
wanted to say?
That was no. it.
Okay. So when we go to the how, and I'll just kind of wrap up, this is actually kind of revisiting some of the things we've already talked about, but again, giving up the need to be right, just being kind of matter of fact about it, having a conversation and being willing to be understanding, choosing the right time, start with positivity. You know, even the hardest conversations can be put into a sandwich. And when I say put in a sandwich, I'm talking about two slices of bread. And the two slices of bread are positive statements. And then in the middle is all the shit in the sandwich. Okay. So that would be your pain points or whatever you want to talk about. But thank you for coming and meeting me today. It really means a lot to me that you understand I have some stuff I want to talk about. And then at the end, I know this was difficult. I really appreciate you listening. And thank you for giving me your time. That's the sandwich method. And that just encapsulates a conversation with a beginning and an end that kind of wraps it up and keeps it in a bubble that's productive. And keeps your intentions straight, keeps you in a pure place where you have a beginning, middle, and end. You can wrap up the conversation at any time. So you know that when you've said that last thank you piece or that positive thing, you're a really great person. I've really enjoyed spending this part of my life with you, but get the fuck out. No, I'm teasing. That's not how it should go. But, but, you know, when you say that, that kind of thank you statement at the back end, being grateful for their presence in your life or for the lessons that you've learned or whatever else, again, just that sense of gratitude will give you a lot of peace about this conversation. You'll have a sense about you that will help you to digest what's going to come afterward, which is what we'll talk about in the next section. Stay on the issue. Talk about one thing at a time. Try not to go all over the place. Try not to drag up history. Try not to bring up all the other times that he or she has disappointed you. Keep it very specific and on topic so that it doesn't become this rabbit trail of never-ending problems and there's no line in the sand as far as what's going on forward, what's going to happen next, that there's no clear path to an action step. You know, once when you get muddled in all that extra stuff, it's really hard to come back to having a serious conversation about one topic.
It's hard, and it's hard to do that. And I think sometimes, and I'm not sure that I haven't fully thought this through, but what comes to my mind as I'm saying, as I'm thinking about this, is when there's the temptation, and I don't even think it's always a temptation, it's just kind of what ends up falling out of one's mouth sometimes, all the other stuff, is how much of that stuff, from wherever perspective you're on, how much of that stuff is there because you're trudging it up to make a point, and how much of it is there because you truly have not gotten resolution,
yeah,
and it's still hurting, and that speaks to the bigger picture, perhaps, and it comes back to, and all of this crap that I want to say right now, we have to deal with it, right? I mean, there are, I think when I think of people who fight well, quote unquote, and they're really good about staying on topic, a lot of the other crap isn't drug up because it has been resolved. But then if you do see this pattern, then you have to acknowledge the pattern too. You know,
that's right.
You don't want to bring up the fact that this is the 17th time they've cheated, but this is the 17th time they've cheated and there's 16 more behind it. And
yeah,
you know, so you're not trying to bring up those individually, but you do have to recognize
that, okay, there's a problem.
This is a bigger problem than just, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to maybe at the beginning of the conversation, after you've thanked them for coming and understanding that you need to have a talk or whatever, then set up some rules. And these setting up the rules should be something that's kind of standard from the very beginning of your relationship. Although I know that oftentimes the people I'm dealing with are so far gone beyond this that they don't have good communication skills. So setting the rules was not even a thought way back then. And now we're unraveling a whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the idea of listening and not talking over people, staying present and not, you know, shutting out or turning off, what's that phrase? Checking out, like in the conversation. Looking at your phone every 5 minutes, you know, like have your phones not on.
Right.
Or put away. Can you tell I'm really against phones lately?
I'm just telling you,
these phones are really like, whatever. Okay. That's another podcast. We'll talk about that. And listen for root emotion. When you're doing that, when you're really paying attention, you can hear emotion when you talk to people. Mm-hmm. And when you're listening for those emotions, repeat back what they say that triggers the idea that there's an emotion that's deeper. So if I say to you, you know, I'm really pissed off that every time I have to go to the store and pick things up, you always send me a list of things on my, you know, in a text, and it ends up taking me an extra half an hour at the store every time I go. So what's the underlying emotion there? It's like not feeling appreciated or not respecting their time, or that they want to come home. They're exhausted and tired and they don't want to, you know, be doing all this extra energy, or there isn't a thoughtfulness there. So there's a lot of other things that could be. So repeat back what they say. So if I'm understanding you right, when I send you this list because I want you to be efficient when you go to the store, it makes you feel like I don't appreciate you and I just want you to be my bitch. You know, is that, do I have that right? Mm-hmm. And give them the opportunity to say, no, that's not what it is. I just feel really disrespected. Oh, okay. So you're telling me that by me communicating with you that we need some things at home, that I'm disrespecting you because you just want to get home. And then he or she can hear that and be like, oh, that's kind of dumb.
Well, or say, oh, okay, wait a minute. I thought I was being efficient. So would it be better if I sent you, you know, is it okay if I tell you that I need the butter because that's what we need for supper, but the other five things we'll just go get another time.
We'll get another time, yeah. So there can be a solution there, but it's, you know, that usually comes after you get the person to acknowledge, yes, that's exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm. Then you're like, so what would be a better way to do this?
Right.
You know, really kind of I'm trying to understand what it is. What is the underlying problem? Because most people do not know how to communicate their feelings. Mm-hmm. You're happy or you're sad, you're mad. They don't go into the whole happy chart, the chart of all of the faces of different forms of emotion. It's on Pinterest. I love it. I brought up this thing. It's got like 30 different facial cartoons that show what different faces kind of look like for different emotions, what body language might look like when somebody is frustrated, when somebody is really mad, pissed off, happy, sad, depressed, whatever. I mean, it's all over the board, but right. There's all these different adjectives to use to better identify the exact emotion. Because angry, there's like 50 words for angry. It's right. The same thing with love, how it's thrown around all the time. Get to the root of what exactly it is, because that will help you solve a problem if that's your intention, is to solve an issue.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The anger is usually some other emotion that's coming
underneath,
out as anger. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, remember the generalizations are just like bombs. every time I go to the store, you send me that list. Well, chances are that every time you go to the store, she hasn't sent you a list. And you know what? She'll hang on that. She'll be like, I do not. Remember that one time 5 years ago? So then it's an accusation. It's not a truth. You mm-hmm. see?
Yep.
So that generalizations are really like time bombs. They're just like, you're just throwing them out there. So be specific, fight fair, point, counterpoint, point, counterpoint. You know, just think of it like a tennis match. And, but again, don't be attached to the outcome. Try not to accuse, accept responsibility where you've had some sort of thing like, yeah, I guess I was just thinking about what I needed at home and I didn't really consider that it's the end of the day when I send you that message and you just want to come home. So mm-hmm. yeah, I accept that as a response, my, you know, just worrying about what I need.
Mm-hmm.
So can you see how that would kind of diffuse?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Again, and with that is not blame shifting, not making it someone else's problem, and be solution focused. And in the end, try to find a thread of consensus. Try to find something that you both can agree upon. In the beginning, like I said, if it's a couple that's breaking up, the thread of consensus might be that you're both not happy, that you're not living your best lives.
Mm-hmm.
In the thread in the case of the grocery store, it might be we do need groceries, but they can be gotten. They're not important. The groceries, the immediate needs, yes, but you know, we can figure this out. Groceries really aren't the issue. So maybe that's the consensus, that that's just what came to the table today. And in the end, sometimes you have to take a time out and walk away from the conversation. If you're really not making progress, if the person's not in the right headspace for the conversation that day, mm-hmm. if it's not the right time, say you're sitting on your park bench and there's a 5K walk run that's going right by your park bench that you decided to meet at, it might be a good time to just kind of sit there and enjoy each other's company and just take a time out. Just be like, this isn't kind of working the way we thought. Why don't we talk about this tomorrow or the next? It's okay. It's okay. Most times you'll never find the exact right time to do these kind of conversations. They're not really fun usually. Again, the intention is really, really important overall as far as whether you're looking for a solution or you're looking for an end, a punctuation mark, you know? So that's what I have as far as how to communicate in an adult manner. And that was a whole lot of information. I really hope it helps somebody somewhere, even just to think through the process of how to deliver wants, needs, desires, expectations, regrets, you know, apologies, whatever.
And all of that goes for any
conversation.
Right. And, you know, and again, it's hard. Making these communication shifts is really hard when it's not been trained into you.
Get off your phone and talk to your partner.
Right.
Start having real conversations. Remember the who, what, when, where, why, and how they're your questions. They're your go-to questions. Super, super easy to think about. Not quite as easy. It will take the bravery and courage to have those conversations. But over time, if you have conversations regularly, it will become easier. It's, again, like a muscle. You have to practice communication to make it second nature.
That's so absolutely true.
Maybe you have a meeting with your partner just to discuss the idea of having regular communication. Maybe you need to communicate about the idea of communicating.
Right.
And that's okay, because mm-hmm. that's a great place to set up your spot, to set up your rules, to set up expectations around it. You know, I don't know. I think a whole lot needs to go into more of the planning phase around communication. Yeah. Would make people feel so much more comfortable.
And to allow ourselves and each other to completely ball it up and fail at it.
Yeah.
Because it's a shift.
Yeah. Yep. It's not always easy, but on the other side, once you have a conversation, generally the shift happens. The shift either happens in a step up or a step back. And what you do with that is your choice. You know, how the whole communication goes can be much more deliberate through your intention. You know, you don't have to be at the effect of a communication. You can see it again as an opportunity in that high level energy, like a level 5 energy, which is around curiosity and playfulness and opportunities and taking risks. That's really, that's high level stuff. That's good stuff. Way out of the 1, 2, 3 victim, anger, and coping and settling. So try to see every conversation as an opportunity, and that'll help keep your energy level high and help your intentions stay true and be authentic to yourself.
We will end on that note of advice. Next week, we will dive into part 4. Check out the rest of the podcast episodes at sexmatterspodcast.com or wherever you find your podcasts. On the website, you can sign up for our email list. You can get linked right in to Patricia's book, Crossing the River Called Suffering. And of course, you can submit questions and comments. We love questions from listeners that we get to answer and talk through and discuss. So please do send in your questions. You do not have to tell us who you are. You can remain anonymous and don't have to admit to anything. If you like the conversations we're having, please do consider supporting us on Patreon. If you are already on Patreon, you can look for Sex Matters with a period. If you're not familiar with Patreon, go to our website, sexmatterspodcast.com, and click the Become a Patron button and support us. It means a lot to us, lets us know that the work we're doing is valuable, and will help to keep it coming. Another amazing thing you can do is leave a review wherever you're listening to our podcasts. If you're on iTunes, for instance, you can click the little ratings, give us a star rating, and a couple words of feedback would be wonderful. We love it. Lets us know that you like what we're doing. It also lets iTunes know you like the show, which is a huge help, and it definitely warms our hearts and who knows what else. Find Patricia at thepowerexchange.co. That's thepowerexchange.co. You can find out what she's doing, the things she's got going on, and how to connect with her to work with her individually if you'd like to do that. You can find my weekly health and wellness podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also, of course, find it on iTunes or anywhere else under Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Thank you so very much. Have a fantastic week. Look forward to talking to you again next time. Take care.